Today's episode is brought to you by SunsetLakeCBD.com. Use the coupon code LEFTISBEST. You will get 20% off of all of their products, and all of their products are worth getting 20% off on. In fact, trying all of them. The tinctures, they come in all different sizes in terms of strength. Great sleep aid, great just sort of relaxing aid. Same too with all their smokables. They have pre-rolls and keef and flower. They also have great gummies. They have sour gummies with CBD. They have some gummies with some CBD and trace amounts of THC, just enough so that it's legal. But for folks like me, I feel it. I definitely feel it. They also have CBD with melatonin gummies, another great sleep aid. I have tried all of these products, and I'm a regular user of about half of them. They also have lotions, particularly ones that are unscented. Good if you're, for your dry skin. They also have salves, like an Arnica and CBD salve that great for muscle aches. For me, personally, I use it for my eczema. It works, and I put it on Saul's mosquito bites, and that works as well, too. They have CBD fudge. They have CBD coffee, which is my weekend brew. Really just amazing products, all tested by third party. You can find, you can know exactly what's in each one of those products on their website. They'll send it to you when you buy some, when you purchase some stuff as well. They are a great company, great business practices, $20 minimum wage, and mostly employee owned company. They are movement supporters. They have donated thousands of dollars to things like food pantries and strike funds and immigrant resettlement and Give Directly, on and on. Just an amazing company, an amazing product. Also have great farming practices, integrated pest management, so no pesticides. They use regenerative farming, so they take care of the land. Just every part of this company and product has a tremendous amount of integrity. Fans of the show, so they said a coupon code is left is best. You get 20% off. Check them out today. And speaking of the show, let's start it.
Friday. That means Monday is Casual Monday. Tuesday, Casual Tuesday. Wednesday, Casual Hump Day. Thursday, Casual Thurs. That's what we call it. And Friday, Casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
It is Friday, January 20th, 2023. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, host of The Politics of Everything, contributing editor at The New Republic, proprietor of the AP, Alex Perrine will be joining us. Also on the program today, Supreme Whitewash. The investigation into the leaker supposedly couldn't find the leaker.
Ah, what do you know?
Surprise, surprise.
Surprise, surprise.
We should be hearing from Republicans in the Senate any day now that they're going to be prosecuting this leaker, right?
Well, and they're going to be, I'm sure, there's going to be hearings to find out.
Follow up.
Meanwhile, Kathy Hochul's self-immolation tour continues. And speaking of the Supreme Court, they're going to be hearing online of freedom of speech cases, big ones, including Section 230 over the next couple of weeks and today. And Trump just hamstrung the Republican attempts to leverage the debt ceiling. Ruben Gallego to challenge Kristen Sinema. Tim Kaine will run for re-election in Virginia. Florida outlaws AP African American studies. U.S. sends 90 Stryker armored vehicles to Ukraine along with British tanks. More tanks possibly to follow. Harvard reverses course and are now rescinding the of an offer to the head of the Human Rights Watch, a fellowship there, which they had originally rescinded because they felt that the Human Rights Watch was too critical of Israel. Lastly, rest in peace, David Crosby. Left us today. Age 81?
81. Legend.
Yep.
Always.
All this and more on today's program. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. It is, as you know, Friday. It is Casual Friday. Emma's here. She's got her...
I mean, this is the softest of collars.
Yep. Because
it's literally soft. This is my softest sweater.
Arguably a turtleneck.
Turtleneck? Mock turtleneck?
Yeah, no, this is not... this is a turtleneck.
That's a full turtleneck. It's full turtleneck.
Right.
Full turtle. You went the full turtle today.
I did. I mean, I went Mitch McConnell style.
Listen, I know a lot of folks... A lot of folks are, you know, tuning in because they want to hear my take on what is going on with Steven Crowder and the Daily Wire and all this. You will get it, but it's going to be a little bit later in the program. Obviously, that's the way we do things here. The fun half is for the fun. And
Sam casually tweeting out last night that we'll have a 12-hour show today.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh,
I mean, I saw that you didn't tag us, but you know that Twitter's still public, right? Like,
mine barely is.
Yet.
Mine barely is. I can't even log on to it. The thing is broken. Twitter is falling apart.
It is a mess. Mess.
It's totally falling apart. I guess it turns out that, like, yeah, you can, you know, let's put it this way. You can take a, one of those aircraft carriers. And, if you take all of the crew, it's in the middle of the ocean. You take all the crew off it, it's still going to go.
Right.
But at one point, because there's no crew, it's going to run into something and crash.
Much like a self-driving Tesla.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, fair enough. Like, exactly. Exactly. I mean, that is the perfect metaphor. But we'll get to the Crowder stuff. But I hope people understand. I was just mocking Steven Crowder's, you know, announcement from a couple of days ago. There were like people like, do you have real stuff to dish? And I don't. I have some theories.
Yeah.
And I'm working on the contract we're going to offer Crowder.
And also, we're going to try and listen. I hate to see people fight online.
Yeah.
No, we're going to try and bring them together.
Sam's going to be the mediator.
Exactly. Yep. 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 I learned a lot, actually, from... you know, going through a divorce and stuff like that. I've learned how to like bring parties together.
Mm-hmm.
We had a mediator. And,
I mean, who better?
Honestly.
Yeah.
You need a fair arbiter, and I can't stand either one of them. So, I mean, I'm going to treat them equally.
It cancels each other out.
Total disdain on both sides.
Right.
Meantime, we are... They have really, you know, like drawn this out. The White House must have made a calculation, and they must have made this calculation, you know, in the during the lame duck, that they weren't going to be able to either. They weren't going to be able to convince Manchin and Sinema to raise the debt ceiling, although they did it before, didn't they? Like where they did a workaround from the filibuster, we'll ask Preen that. But I'm pretty sure it was the debt ceiling that they had done it before, like a year ago. And but maybe they couldn't get rid of the debt ceiling permanently. I don't know. But I also think that the Democrats think that it's either a winner politically or an opportunity for them to negotiate away some stuff that they wanted to negotiate away.
They're trying to do 2011, like it's 2011 redux.
We'll see. But their other plan was, oh, at least in the House, was we're going to get some moderate Republicans who will abandon because the Republicans have been so not like our father's Republicans, as if they've been asleep for 15 years. And there's definitely some moderates who are going to cross over and keep the Republicans from essentially holding the U.S. economy hostage. And who better than Nancy Mace? Who was so outraged by how these renegade Republicans were acting. And, oh, I'm not going to tolerate this. And here she is being interviewed by The Washington Post. Obvious choice to cross the aisle because you don't put party first. This is about the country's economy, and she cares.
And every time there's a debt limit fight that really comes to the brink, it's been in the 1990s and in 2011. Both times there was a Republican House of Representatives and a Democratic president. Why do Republicans care about the debt and spending under Democratic presidents, and it's not so much an issue under Republican presidents?
It's one of the reasons I fault both sides. For decades now, Republicans are just as much responsible for our debt as our Democrats. Both sides are guilty as charged. For a long time, it's always been Republicans wanted to increase defense spending, and for that, Democrats wanted to increase entitlement spending. And neither side has held the other accountable. And now we're in this predicament with trillions and trillions of dollars of debt that we're facing. And now we have a president who's unwilling to come to the table and negotiate some sort of deal. And I don't think this has to be some crazy far right.
Oh, pause it. Before we get into the part where she basically says that she's not going to, that she's going to vote for this. Had she voted against raising the debt ceiling in the past? Did she vote during Trump's years to
cut defense spending? She says that, you know, both sides aren't doing their part, and she lists that as the Republicans' fault. So, hey, I'll take some cuts to defense spending.
Only if there's a Washington Post, if only there was a reporter who had an entire, media organization behind them to sort of say, like, hey, wait a second. Your answer doesn't make any sense unless you voted to not raise the debt ceiling when there was a Republican in office.
Right, right.
But alas, no. And now here she goes in to talk about how she's really not going to cross the aisle unless she does exactly what the reporter just set up as a premise, that we're going to just do this when there's a Democratic president.
Debt that we're facing. And now we have a president who's unwilling to come to the table and negotiate some sort of deal. And I don't think this has to be some crazy far right or far left sort of negotiation. I mean, if you were to cut a very small percentage of every dollar, say 1 to 5 pennies, 1 to 5 cents on the dollar for every future dollar the federal government spends, you could balance the budget in about a decade. And I don't think that's too much to ask.
Pause it. I want to add this too. We don't want to balance the budget. Mm-hmm. Balancing the budget is a guaranteed recession. And this is both backed up by history, but also just plain sense. There's a finite amount of money at any given time. And the government can make more money at any time. That's called borrowing money. But when the government has a surplus, when you get rid of the debt, when the government has a surplus, that means that the private sector is lacking money, mm-hmm. has the debt, and that's a problem. These are two ends of a balance sheet. So we don't want that, but continue.
But isn't it just like a household budget, Sam?
It is just like a household budget if the household had the ability to print their own money.
Yeah.
And was divided, let me put it this way. If we have a fixed amount of money in the household, and the parents have some and the kids have some, or let's say just like all the males have some and all the females have some, or however you want to divide it. If one part of that family has, and there's a fixed amount of money, if one has a surplus, the other one has a deficit. Mm-hmm. And because the government can borrow more money, you want them to have the deficit. You want them to have the debt. Because a household cannot.
Do we get a prize if we balance the budget? Is there some sort of like special like award we get to give ourselves?
Everybody gets a sticker on their forehead of a star.
Yeah, and they get to lose their job.
And then they get to lose their job. Good.
$3, say 1 to 5 pennies, 1 to 5 cents on the dollar for every future dollar the federal government spends. You could balance the budget in about a decade. And I don't think that's too much to ask for either side to come to the table and figure out how do we do this? How do we save Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid, and then balance things out? And if you look at the penny plan,
Social Security does not contribute to the deficit.
You don't touch
statutorily.
And after the budget is balanced, you can increase spending by over 10% every year thereafter. That's called responsible. And it's just crazy to me that we're at this juncture. And of course, there's urgency, there's an emergency, there's need, there are headlines to be put into this corner without the ability to have a conversation with the president on what might be a responsible next step for the next, not even asking the next year, but the next 10 years to do this in a very responsible manner. And that's completely off the table. And I don't think that's what the American people want right now.
The question still remains that was posed at the beginning, and I'm not sure if there was a follow-up. Why is this happening under Democratic presidents in particular? And
they had full control of everything 4 years ago.
They don't want a Republican president to own Social Security and Medicare cuts.
Nope.
No. And so why would Biden cave to that? He'd be an idiot to do so.
Yep. All right. We're going to be talking to Alex Perine in a second about this and more. But first, a couple of words from our sponsor. Did you hear this? T-Mobile had a big data leak. Big data leak.
Whoa.
And it happened in November. But somehow, people don't hear about it until January. Hmm. Well, if your stuff from that T-Mobile leak was being sold, you would know about it right away if you had Aura. Aura is an easy-to-use app that includes everything you need to stay safe online, protect your identity, protect your kids, I mean, all of it. Aura protects you from scammers and hackers by scanning the so-called dark web where criminals sell stolen information. So if your stuff was already on the market, essentially, you'd probably know about that leak before anybody else did, or at the very least, you'd know whatever it was somehow. My phone number, my emails, my passwords, my social security numbers could be out there. And Aura would alert you to it fast if it finds anything. To help you fight back against those websites that put all your public information or your personal information, I should say, and make it public by automatically requesting of your removal on a regular basis, helps reduce robocalls, helps reduce junk mail, helps reduce creeps, all of it. Aura gives you near real-time alerts on suspicious credit inquiries. So if someone's trying to open up a loan or a credit card in your name, you'd know about it. I got one when I opened up an account for my daughter under my name, popped up on my phone, bingo, bango, I knew it was me, so it was good, but it was comforting to know that that was happening. Their VPN allows you to stay anonymous online by keeping your browsing history and your personal information safe and encrypted. They protect your devices from viruses, malware, spyware, so the bad guys can't break in. Aura helps you even manage what your kids can do on their devices. You can restrict specific apps. You can set screen time limits. You can set focus time to make sure that they're doing their homework and not looking at YouTube. They have a password manager that lets you store and access your online passwords in a secure and convenient fashion. And maybe you have an app that does one of these things, but you don't have an app that does all of those things. Mm. So you don't have to have seven different apps or whatever it is. Let Aura do the hard work of keeping you safe online. If you sign up right now, Aura is going to give you a 2-week free trial with my link. You may be shocked at how much information Aura finds for you. You can do it now for free. Aura.com, Aura.com/majority. That's Aura.com/majority to start your free trial. It will be linked in the podcast and YouTube descriptions and at the at majority.fm. Also, one of our sponsors today, where do I have that? Oh, okay. I'm getting a black one. But, Oh, I was talking to myself.
Oh.
Wait, these are the blades. Shoot. It's Henson Shaving. It is, these are great razors. Where's my Henson shaver? I thought I had it here.
Okay.
Oh, here we go. I got it.
There we go.
I put it down here.
It's under the desk shaving kit.
Yep. This is great. So, you know, I've advertised for other shavers a while back. When I got my beard, I didn't want to have, I didn't want to have a subscription. I didn't want to have all that plastic. I looked around. This guy.
Hensink's, that looks nice.
Oh, no, it is nice.
Does it feel nice in your hand?
Yes.
There we go.
It is a precision tooled. Hensink Shaving, it's a family-owned aerospace parts manufacturer that has made parts for the International Space Station, Mars Rover, and now they're bringing precision engineering to your shaving experience. This thing, it's just a beautiful piece of equipment. And what I did not understand about like why you don't necessarily get a great shave from disposables in particular is not because the blade is dull or this and that. It is the distance between the blade and how secure it is in the thing. So it's like apparently like a diving board. The longer the board, more wobble. Mm. And the more wobble on your blade, the more nicks and cuts you get. So it's not a blade problem. It's an extension problem. These guys use like the computer machines to obviously, I mean, they're an aerospace company. They make metal razors that extend just 0.0013 inches. That's less than the thickness of a human hair, which means that the blade is secure and stable in here. They also have these, I don't know if you can see these channels right in here, where you don't have to bang the thing on the sink, so no extra hair gets caught in there. There's no scraping the hair out with your thumb or any of that stuff. So this is the thing about this company is they wanted to make the best razor. They didn't care about necessarily making the most revenue generating business as much as they wanted to make to get it. They wanted to just make great razors, and they have done it. They have, you buy this once, you're done. And then you get non-proprietary, just classic razor blades. And for $3 to $5 a year, this razor works for you. They got a couple of different versions of this one. That's, I think there's two, one that's for like longer hair, one's for this one, which I use really just basically here now. Mm. But they got a bunch of different colors. They got aluminum, and then they have like a very super high end one that is really cool looking, actually, to be honest with you. But once you own a Hensink razor, like I say, $3 to $5 a year, they give my audience a 2-year supply of blades for free. So that means you buy the razor, you are done for a couple of years. No subscriptions, no thrown out, junk like that, no plastic. HensonShaving.com, HensonShaving.com/majority. That's HensonShaving.com/majority. Add a razor and 100 pack of blades to your cart. Then enter the code majority. You get the blades for free. Link is in the description. Check it out. Really cool. They got a black one that is really super cool that is on the way to me right now, I hope. Also, lastly, one of our sponsors today is Hold On Bags. Great time, beginning of the year, new year, develop new habits. There are things that you can do on a daily basis, aren't going to necessarily affect it. Climate change and this and that, but you can create less garbage. Mm. That is one thing, like the personal thing that you can do. I mean, if it was up to me, I would outlaw all plastic bags. We've done that in New York City with just sort of like the grocery bags. But still, you have these single-use plastic bags, which are horrible for the planet and particularly the oceans. Hold On makes trash and kitchen bags that are heavy duty, plant-based. They are non-toxic. They are 100% home compostable, which means that they break down in weeks, not decades. So they do not fill up our landfills, and they do not pollute the oceans, kill the fish and the turtles and all that stuff. They have zip seal bags that you can put, for sandwiches, for the kids' lunch, or for, gallon-sized ones for, like, I don't know, crayons and junk around the house. Point being that you can send those with your kids. You don't have to feel guilty about them just throwing this away. Single-use plastic is some of the worst plastic, both in terms of the way that they produce it, they dispose of it, and the fact that it doesn't decompose. I've said this before. 40% of the plastic that exists in like our garbage landfills and in our ocean right now has been produced in the past 18 years. You can make a big difference. This is made from non-toxic ingredients, plant-based renewables. Hold On trash and kitchen bags meet the highest standards of compostability, and they break down, like I say, in weeks, not centuries. So whether it's like you put it in your compost or whether you just even throw it away, at least the plastic's not there.
Right.
And I'm using these a lot for both cat litter, and I made the move to the full-size trash bags too. To shop plant-based bags and replace single-use plastics all over your home, visit holdonbags.com/majority. Enter majority at checkout. Save 20% off your order. Sustainability has never been more simple. That's holdon, H-O-L-D-O-N, bags.com/majority. Enter majority, receive 20% off your order. Small things can lead to lasting change if we stop and say, hold on.
I did it.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. Let's bring in, or let's take a quick break, and then we'll come back, and Matt Perrine will join us.
Alex Perrine.
What did I say, Matt Perrine?
Yeah.
Alex Perrine. We are back. Sam Cedar, Emma Vigeland will be right back with us in just a moment. Joining us, the proprietor of really the only AP you need, and also the co-host of The Politics of Everything, contributing editor to The New Republic, Alex Perrine. Welcome back to the program. Happy New Year.
Thank you. Happy New Year to you, Sam.
Sorry about what's happened to your apartment since we last saw you. It's been all the detail has been bled out of it.
Well, you know, energy prices have been rising, and we unfortunately had to go with a lower resolution for most of our to power most of our furniture and the high-tech background I use to appear regularly on your show. Just can't afford to power it anymore in high res.
And then the upshot is you don't need to check your eyes as often because everything's already somewhat blurry. So that's pretty good. All right, let's get into this. Let's just start with the maybe Emma stepped out because she didn't want to be around when I flex about this, but the Supreme Court investigation.
Yeah.
As recently as like 5 or 6 days ago, they were like, we've narrowed it down. And they announced yesterday that apparently they're going to end the investigation without solving.
Yeah.
It's one way to narrow it.
Yeah. And from what it appears, this is who the investigation focused on. Temporary and permanent employees. Temporary being law clerks. Permanent employees being, I guess, like, you know, sort of administrative people who had or may have had access to the draft opinion during the period from the initial circulation until the publication by Politico. Now, there's two things that seem to be absent from this. Because one is that permanent employees do not include Supreme Court justices.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And the other thing that occurs to me is this draft opinion is being circulated. Like, where, like, who had it before the initial circulation? Right. It's also another question that's not associated, that's not answered. But I mean, this is bullshit.
It is.
And yeah. You know, and now that Emma's back,
yes,
I can say that
he was right. And my prediction was what he wants to say.
Yes, that my prediction was when they find out that it was a conservative, that it came from, you know, Alito, probably, if not him, you know, somebody he authorized, then they're not going to find who it was. And if they do, even if they did find out who it was, that person would be in the wilderness for about 6 months before they get to the Heritage Foundation and have a huge sinecure and nobody thinks about it again.
And did you point out the fact that one of the two people responsible for the investigation is literally the successor to Sam Alito at the U.S. Attorney's Office in New Jersey? Like, they work together?
Oh, well, that's a little surprising.
Hmm.
I mean, what's your take on this?
Yeah, I mean, it's... there's a really funny bind that I guess Roberts and the court in general were in. And that funny bind is like, if you think of everything through the lens of, protect the integrity of the court, but also protect the public legitimacy of the court, they couldn't do anything because you have to have a phony investigation to say we're investigating it, but you can't actually pin blame on a justice because that would severely damage the public perception of the court and the integrity of the court. So then as a result, you have to have a sham investigation that everyone knows is a sham. Because there's not really any way out of this. But yeah, I mean, it reminds me of, I don't know, we're getting more transparency just through the complete failure of these bullshit attempts at transparency. Mm. We're all just much clearer on how things actually work in these institutions now.
What is interesting about that is this investigation, most people in this country do not care,
right,
are not aware about it.
Right.
It's off the front pages already. Nobody's going to think about it. The whole point of this investigation anyways is for the legal institutions, and the legal institution is looking at this and going, this is bullshit. Mm-hmm. They all know it. And, you know, there was a piece in the Atlantic, just 4 days ago, talking about how the Supreme Court justices do not seem to be getting along, like, mm-hmm. I don't know if people are aware of this. It's rare. You know, they all are fairly elite. They're in a, you know, and that. They,
I mean, it was famous, like RBG vacationing
Scalia. And Breyer making jokes with Thomas and blah, blah, blah. The last time there was anything like this was in the wake of Bush v. Gore. In fact, mm-hmm. Newsweek was running an article about it the week that the planes hit the towers, and they pulled the article. I've heard differing things as to whether it was going to be on and this is back when Newsweek actually meant something.
It was actually
a real thing. With all due respects to people working on it now, but I'm just saying it was a different. You know, it was like the network news was different then too. And this, they track it to Dobbs.
Yeah.
But I don't think it was the decision alone. I think they know who leaked this.
Yeah.
And I think this has been a sham from the get-go. And, you know, I think when we heard a month or two ago, was it Kagan or Sonia Sotomayor said, we're going to know who it is in like 2 months and we're going to announce it. That was her trying to make sure that the investigation was real.
Yeah.
By creating expectations that they could get to a solution here, because she knew you could get to you could find it because they know who did it.
Yeah.
They know who did it. Mm-hmm. And the question is like, how is this going to fester? Because the way, I mean, this is pretty obvious what goes on with this type of thing. They're like, we can't announce that it was Alito. Yeah, I mean, they're not having a group meeting where they sit around saying this, but this is how it's being communicated between, like, you know, John Roberts and others. Like, it will undercut the institution too much at a key time where,
and that's the public, what they care primarily about across the aisle, right? Or across partisan lines, of course, on the court.
Yeah. Of course. Yeah. I mean, this is the iron law of institutions, right? Like, you don't want, you know, you don't want the institution to fail. And if you're a Supreme Court justice, that concept overall is more important than any given law, because you're talking about the foundation of our democracy. And frankly, I'm not sure that they're incorrect, but I also think there's a problem, because there's the appearance and then there's the reality, and the reality is, you know, at one point you can not pay attention to the infrastructure of your house, and it can look good from outside, but at one point there's going to be a major problem. Mm-hmm. And I think we are going to be heading towards that, because this is, I mean, I just don't see how, if you are Kagan and Sotomayor, this doesn't fester and make you angrier and angrier and angrier. Because let's be clear what that leak was about. That leak wasn't just a, here's a leak. That leak was a strategic leak, a tactic used to lock, you know, either Kavanaugh or Coney Barrett
undercut Kagan and Sotomayor directly in the case they were trying to build, essentially to
undercut
preserve
Roberts.
Yeah,
that undercut Roberts. Yeah. Too. Yeah. Undercut Roberts, who was the one who was doing that? You know, sort of that or negotiate. I mean, I think this is a big deal. I'm curious as, like, you know, what people in the legal institution are saying.
I mean, I think you can look at, you mentioned Kagan sort of, I think, trying to will a real investigation into being, or a real result into being. But she is a good bellwether for the most mainstream law institution attitude, you know, and she's been wanted to be a sort of conciliatory, like, in the mold of the old liberal justices who could get along with all their colleagues. And she's been, I mean, she's been speaking at law schools lately, saying stuff like, maybe it's less meaningful if we can watch baseball together, if you know, the institution itself is not functioning. Like, she's actually been delivering lines like that. And I mean, I think we're going to talk about judiciary politics in New York in a minute, but I think one thing that's happening is like, there's the polite fictions that sort of sustain these institutions are becoming harder and harder to keep up. And, you know, I think I've heard people who are in, you know, who are in law school saying stuff like, hey, for the first time ever, students in my class are coming into class saying the law isn't real, you know, which is like not the kind of thing people who went into law school would go in and say before. Right.
I got to be honest with you. My contracts professor refused to call on me multiple times because he knew I was going to say that.
Yeah, exactly.
And that was 25 years ago. But I never became a lawyer. But yes, right. I think, like, the veneer is coming off.
Yeah.
And I have yet to check in with my dad about this to see if he.
There's a generational divide. I'm doing my own lobbying efforts about the, like, emperor having no clothes. So,
but the veneer is definitely coming off. And the question is like, you know, and we're seeing it, like, the Hochul thing plays out in that way. And the question is like, are we going to see it on the federal level? Like, Biden went to great lengths to protect the Supreme Court status quo. He appointed an entire commission that was going to look at, like, what needs to be done with the Supreme Court. And they came back and they said, you know, maybe we should change the water cooler in the Supreme Court, or maybe, you know, buy new chairs. Like, they were like, nothing else, no structural changes.
They were like, have we tried respecting it more? Like,
yeah, exactly. Maybe the problem's with us, not with the court.
Maybe the problem is you're asking a lot of impertinent questions.
Exactly. And so, I mean, this is, I don't know. I think this is extraordinary. I mean, because this is... it's possible they all just go back to their corners and say, like, okay, well, whatever, that's fine. You know, because it's also came out in the past couple of weeks, or I should say past couple of months, that Alito did this at least one time before.
Yeah, right.
In 2014 with the Hobby Lobby case, he leaked it to advocates who didn't want birth control to be dispensed by insurance in a couple of weeks in advance so that they could prepare for it. But we also know in 2012, someone from his office probably spoke to the Wall Street Journal about Roberts going around and undercutting him in terms of what they wanted to do with the ACA when they wanted to strike that down. I mean, so this has been ongoing, and there's no reason to believe that Alito is going to stop. I mean, now he may not need to because the most controversial of cases has been essentially – they weathered the storm and that's it. And then they've gone through it and now they're just going to go dismantle stuff. But this is, I don't know, this is effed up and nobody's going to care. I mean, not nobody, but nobody.
Nobody. Yeah. Most people are not going to care.
Well, it's hard to get across. It's hard to get across why it matters. But it's one of the reasons it's hard to get across why it matters is that the way that people, you know, who care about the integrity of the court, the way they try to signal a red alert is by giving really, really boring talks where they hint that all is not well, you know, like no one, like they're not like, I don't know. It seems like, I think the conservatives and Alito are making, they have made a bet that,
you can't touch us.
Yeah. You can't touch us. Right. And especially like, we have you right where you want you, because if you care so much about the integrity of the court, then you can't touch us. Touching us attacks the integrity of the court.
We are the court. I am the Senate. Right? I mean, that's really what it is, right? And he's hiding behind that. He is the institution, so you can't attack the institution.
Can't attack him, yeah.
This is like the debt ceiling.
Yeah.
In somewhat respects, it's sort of like this, you know, the debt ceiling thing. It's sort of like, you know, we've got the country held hostage, and so what are you going to do? On some level. And I guess there's going to be two things to watch, it seems to me, because Joe Biden will not say anything about this at all. It's the Judiciary Committee in the Senate. Mm-hmm. Dick Durbin is no Dianne Feinstein, but he's not much else either, frankly. I mean, he's pretty mealy when it comes to this. It's really just a question of like how hard, let's say, White House pushes, Sheldon White House, in terms of whether this gets any type of hearing.
White House might actually try.
I would be surprised if he doesn't go hard at this.
Right.
In the House, it's going to be interesting because a couple of days ago, the Republicans were talking about, we need to have hearings on this leaker.
Yeah. I think they should.
Right? I would love them to have hearings on this leaker, but I'm starting to think like this might be one of those things like, oh yeah, we forgot to get around to that because they're going to get the message that we don't want this to come out.
Yeah, right. Right.
I mean, they were saying that Trump was saying that, the Supreme Court leaker should be jailed, right? I mean, or at least Republicans were saying
that. Gotta be tough.
Yeah.
Gotta be tough. But they're not. So those are the two things to look at the judiciary in both those, both in the Senate and in the House. Outside of that, then I guess it's just like, you know, how many sort of like legal institutionalists will start to sort of like give up the ghost and stop pretending. I don't know. You would think we would already pass that point, but let's talk about Kathy Hochul. I know you you follow New York State politics quite a bit. She is like just keeps stepping on a rake, it seems to me. She loses this LaSalle fight in the Senate and in the New York State Senate.
Yeah.
She's now talking about suing the state Senate.
She has retained counsel to do that because essentially the Judiciary Committee voted down LaSalle 10-9. So now she's saying she's retained counsel. She's saying she's going to like that. Sue that the, they're only supposed to advise and on an appointment like this. She's trying to do Cuomo glad handing politics, but she has none of the political capital to do it. Is what it seems like.
Just a couple of things that she's done over the past like couple of weeks. She screws up this LaSalle thing. He's horribly conservative. I want to talk about Hakeem Jeffries coming in too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She also destroyed the right to repair bill. Apparently, we'll talk more about that more specifically down the road. She also raised the cap on pensions can hold more private equity hedge fund assets, which is, you know. And you combine this with like the thing that she did with the Bills, with the stadium, was it that she did?
Right, it was a massive giveaway to keep the Buffalo Bills in Buffalo.
She's not very good at this,
right? No.
And like you know, for a while she you know like in the wake of Cuomo, she was seemingly at least capitulating to all the things you would want her to capitulate to, I guess.
Yeah.
And then. Somehow she thought that she was doing something different. I
don't know. It's you know, I think in the wake of Cuomo, we were happy to have someone normal, someone who just seemed normal. And she was at least saying the right things, right? But I don't. What's weird is that. She's acting a little bit like she just came off of a really, really strong electoral win. Right?
Like she has a mandate, but like she hurt Democrats down ballot because she was so poor.
Yeah. Yeah. And so she kind of limped to election. And in an environment too, where, you know, you look at Democrats in other states where they had, you know, these really unusually strong performances. And I don't mean, you know, I mean in what we would call purplish states, you know, like there were
Pennsylvania, Wisconsin.
Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, yeah, Michigan, you know. And so in New York, and the Democrats did really, really poorly across the board. And Hochul limps to her first election and then comes out of it picking a fight with the state Senate that she came in not just I think it'd be one thing if she misread the room, thought there wouldn't be that much opposition, did the thing that New York governors have been doing for a generation, picked a conservative jurist to maintain this sort of conservative leaning majority on the state Supreme Court. And then expected that to sail through the Senate, and then and then was caught off guard by the pushback. But she came in; she's coming in guns blazing. I mean,
it's just insane to pick this fight and have it go national. By the way, by bringing in Hakeem Jeffries and his willingness to enter into this is very troubling and interesting to me as well. But in the middle of this push by the Biden administration. To stack judges in positions of power, understanding that the right wing has had a leg up on this fight, appointing judges to these positions. Biden has been proactive about that and is breaking records with the speed of these appointments. To have Hochul in one of the biggest states in the country not really seem to understand or choosing to actively ignore the national narrative on Republicans being a threat to democracy and pushing a conservative nominee that would tilt the Court of Appeals in New York from a deadlock 3-3 to a 4-3 conservative majority, and then having the new leader of the Democrats join in on that fight. That's a massive disconnect between what the Biden administration is trying to say and emphasize the urgency of the judiciary.
And I think what it shows, and we definitely should talk more about how strange and troubling it is that Jeffries did that. But what it shows from Hochul is that she underestimated that judicial politics actually have salience among the most loyal Democratic voters now, in a way where I think, you know, for a long time, it was essentially this idea that once you got the loyal Democrats to vote for you, you could sort of get away with anything once you were in office. And Cuomo operated under that impression for a very long time. And so maybe you just think she didn't realize people would both pay attention to a court fight and that they would have strong feelings about it, which seems politically naive after years of you know, New York politics being about figuring out how Albany works and going after the IDC and stuff like that. But again, it's crazy to want to take the fight so far that she would suffer a defeat in the Senate and then say she threatened at least to sue them over it instead of just taking the L, basically.
You know, it raises a couple of questions. Like, first off, we should say the one. I think it's really good news in terms of, like, New York State politics sucks.
Yeah.
I mean, like, and the Democratic Party apparatus in New York State, the machine, horrible, right? I mean, you're talking about everyone from Billy Crowley to Hakeem Jeffries to Jacobs. I mean, it is in addition to probably being horribly corrupt, and it's just inept.
And they're inept, too.
And they're inept as well. And again, this is sort of like the iron law of institutions. That's why Hakeem Jeffries is here with Hochul. Yep. He is not, this has nothing to do with anything other than maintaining a network and a power base within New York State. This is him just protecting his own seat and trying to get his own, you know, people and patronage and whatnot.
Yeah.
You know, Hochul won only by 5 points against Zeldin, which is far closer than it should have been. I think Schumer won by like 20 points.
Yeah.
In this state. But she called in a lot of reinforcements and a lot of money. And I think the idea was like, and you know, this came up during when Zephyr Teachout and when Cynthia Nixon was challenging Cuomo. Cuomo needed to win big because he wanted to launch a national campaign. He wanted to be president. He wanted to be talked about presidentially. Yep. Or maybe setting himself up for a VP if there was, you know, a woman who was the presidential candidate or something like that from a different part of the country. I mean, he just wanted to set him up to be a national figure. I'm not convinced that Hochul wasn't trying to do the same thing. Make it seem like there is like a real problem with Zeldin. Get the money in, pad her win to the extent that she could. And it's almost as if she's following the plan that she had, even though she didn't get that padding. And when I see her suing, I think one of two things. She is not bright.
No.
Yeah.
Or she wants to be seen in opposition because for whatever reason, she thinks this is 1993 too. And that's just not going to fly. It's just not going to fly. It's not going to help her at all. Like, she can't become Gretchen Whitmer by fighting the progressives in New York State. Like, Gretchen Whitmer is fighting in a state that's a purple state. She's in a blue state.
She's in a solid blue state. And her enemy, this is the crazy thing, is as much as anyone, including someone, you know, as much as anyone would like to paint this as, the purity test left is the socialists and the DSA and the purity test left are sabotaging Hochul. It's women's groups and labor, and like, that's who you need.
Who's mainstream Democratic Party if it's not women's groups and labor?
Right. It's insane to pick this fight over someone whose radioactive issues are reproductive rights and labor. That's madness to pick the fight on those particular issues in this political environment.
Well, she made a miscalculation where she thought that by having, you know, by selling the idea of appointing the first Latino in New York State government, essentially, where Latinos are completely underrepresented relative to like a population numbers. She thought that was going to carry the day, and people like Gustavo Rivera, you know, all respect to that guy for basically coming out and both like having to protect a flank where he's like sort of, you know, saying to his community, like, we need this representation, but this guy,
yeah,
he may be a Latino, but he is not representing you. He is not representing your interests. And that's, you know, that's not an easy thing to do. And I think Hochul underestimated Rivera's ability to do that, and others too. He's not the only one. And
what's crazy is I think there's going to be this. I think that inadvertently, the repercussions from this. I've seen the state senators, the Democratic state senators, now saying like, we're going to stop accepting judicial nominees who have run on the Conservative Party ticket, which sounds like a reasonable thing to do. In machine politics in New York City, that's everyone. That's like, that actually fundamentally could be a huge shift in how judicial politics work if that becomes a new standard they'll actually make people adhere to. So I think the backfire here could be way bigger than this one nomination even.
And also, I mean, I hope that it becomes empowering, because yeah. They'll also say, like, you know, you mentioned like that she misunderestimated, or she underestimated, I should say.
George W. Bush over here.
Strategery. Poor strategery.
Hokey Hochul is what I call her.
You're going to give her a massage.
Hoaxster. Oh, hoaxster. You said that she underestimated the voters, but it really is the activists.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I mean, this was, and I mean, it was voters in the sense that, like, but it's the most active of voters.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I know people who contacted their state senators who didn't even know the name of their state senators yeah. before they contacted them. Like, the combination of losing the House, and I'm talking about Congress now, U.S., federal House, losing the House. In part because of seats that were lost in this state.
Yep.
Which were a direct result of having a conservative majority on the state Supreme Court, you know, more or less the state Supreme Court. The close proximity of those two things happening when everybody was like, at least we're going to get the court back in 3 weeks or 4 weeks. And then she comes out with this. I mean, New York State Democrats, progressives, whatever you want to call it, need to get engaged, because we're watching like how California can lead the progressive agenda. I mean, whether you think that Newsom is full of it or not, there are things happening there that are good.
Yeah.
New York State needs to be doing that too.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And
it's crazy. We've actually had these majorities for a while. Cuomo's been gone for a while, and it's still like pulling teeth to get these progressive priorities done in this state.
Yep.
It's absurd how many obstacles are put in the way of doing all sorts of stuff that should be low hanging fruit.
Yeah, people got to get out of the city, move to Western New York, upstate New York. Let's do this, people.
We got to upzone Long Island too, like Nassau and Suffolk. If we can just dump millions more people into high rises surrounding all the LIRR trains, then we're gonna be in a new golden age.
Or we slice half of it off and give it to Rhode Island.
Yeah,
that's another option. Yeah, that actually works too. Rhode Island had the machine that actually like wins elections by like Soviet numbers, though.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
Like, you want to talk about the ineptitude of the New York's machine? Like, they lose elections, you know?
It's crazy. It's crazy. And the way that they did those referendums a year and a half ago now was just a joke. Yeah. Was a joke.
Yeah.
And I mean, you can only imagine that they didn't want these reforms. It's the only way that you can really rationalize that. All right, let's just move. We got a little bit of time left because news broke today that was, I think, is really going to change the tenor of this whole debt ceiling thing. Mm-hmm. And you will recall that when he ran last time, early in the campaign, not so much late in the campaign, but particularly when he was running within the Republican Party, Donald Trump made some squawks about protecting Social Security and protecting Medicare. And for the most part, he never wanted to go there. He never wanted to deal with those things, which is a good thing. He was willing to cut Medicaid in the context of the ACA and the expansion of Medicaid. And that would have been disastrous. But in terms of like Medicare and Social Security, he realized that like that was the way he was going to make himself distinct from the other Republicans. And also, it's just a loser.
It's a loser.
It's a loser. It's a third rail. They call it the third rail, and it is the third rail.
And he has a decent gut sense of those kinds of things and doesn't want to go there.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And if you're a guy whose brain was frozen in 1994 like that, you would still retain that. You would retain Social Security popular. Don't touch it.
Right. And the Republicans have been gearing up with this debt ceiling. Mm-hmm. They're talking, we'll cut some of the woke stuff from the military, like the rainbow bombs or whatever it is that they think there is.
Yeah.
But we really got to go for entitlements. And then this happened today. It was dropped on, I don't know if this came from Truth Social Media
it was posted on Trump War Room's Twitter account, because Trump, reminder, despite being reinstated by Elon Musk, still can't tweet because he did a business deal for Truth Social.
Happy
over at Truth, thank you very much.
But this came out.
Under no circumstances should Republicans vote right to cut a single
pause
penny.
It for 1 second. Can we just go back? Like, I don't know, like as if like this was an excerpt from a different speech but you know, like
just
no,
diving right into it.
This is just a note from like Trump.
Like a voice memo.
Not like, even like, hey everybody, remember me. It's almost like it's just broken in.
Like, even on an SNL cold open, there'd be the announcer would be like, and
right,
now
exactly.
A message.
Exactly.
I think some of our callers could learn from Trump. Get right to the point.
Exactly. All right, here we go.
Under no circumstances should Republicans vote to cut a single penny from Medicare or Social Security to help pay for Joe Biden's reckless spending spree, which is more reckless than anybody's ever done or had in the history of our country. Biden has blown out the federal budget, wasted trillions on left-wing lunacy and the ridiculous Green New Deal, which is a tremendous problem and embarrassment to us. And thrown open our treasury and our borders to migrants from all over the world. In fact, migrants that are coming from prisons and migrants that are coming from mental institutions are being dropped into the United States. And we do nothing about it. I had the safest border in the history of our country just 2 years ago. And now we have probably the worst border in the history of the world. I don't think any country has ever had anything like we have
so
right
judicious.
Now. Well, we absolutely need to stop Biden's out-of-control spending. The pain should be borne by Washington bureaucrats, not by hardworking American families and American seniors. The seniors are being absolutely destroyed in the last 2 years. Cut the hundreds of billions of taxpayer dollars going to corrupt foreign countries. Cut the mass releases of illegal aliens that are depleting our social safety net and destroying our country. Cut the left-wing gender programs from our military. Cut the billions being spent on climate extremism. Cut waste, fraud, and abuse everywhere that we can find it. And there's plenty of it. But do not cut the benefits our seniors worked for and paid for their entire lives. Save Social Security. Don't destroy it. The Democrats are looking to destroy Social Security. We're not going to let them do it. Thank you very much.
I mean, I am so torn by this on some level. And I think, you know, people know that, you know, for me, well, first off, like, you know, his political acumen on this one particular topic is quite good. And, this is great news, because this means that Democrats have to go to the left of Trump on this. I don't believe that Donald Trump is a populist. I want to make that clear, but he's regardless of what his intentions are in this instance, he is going to inhibit the ability of Republicans to do this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right? Yeah. I mean... Yeah.
I mean, McCarthy just had to go through that insane speakership fight, and Donald Trump, he had to go to Trump, and essentially that's why Marjorie Taylor Greene was on his side. So this is as much a message to Kevin McCarthy as it is to anybody who already is on such shaky ground. He knows who's still, you know, he still has to go to the king.
It's going to be interesting, too, to see, like, what does DeSantis do? Does yeah. DeSantis now say cut Social Security and Medicare? Right. I mean, that yeah. would be. I mean, this is.
That's a great point too, because we're at the part of the, what they call the invisible primary here, where like DeSantis, you know, everyone advising him to like win is gonna tell him like to do the kinds of things that win you elite conservative support, which is going to include entitlement reforms. But yep. you know, Trump. Taking his message to the actual people is again going to have the more popular position here.
And it's going to be interesting. Like, if we had a functional media right now, this would be like, you would not be able to be a Republican congressman
without hearing that quote,
yeah. and answering that question. What are you going to do? And you know what? If they want to cut the woke stuff from the military,
yeah.
they can definitely
go cut all the huge woke that's coming out.
You mean the recruiting propaganda?
Yeah, exactly. Honestly, like, let's cut the shit out of the military. Let's do that.
Yeah.
Let's do it. It's all woke as far as I know.
How much is their woke budget? Like half of that military budget? We can just cut it in half right there.
Their entire, all of their budget that is being used to inscribe Martin Luther King quotes on, DOD.
On the side of, the F-15s and stuff like that. Yeah, exactly.
Well, please don't cut that, Mr. Trump, please.
All these gender neutral tanks. Let's get rid of those things.
Yeah. You make us so upset.
But then we also got to talk about, like, first off, I would say, when he says, when he said elderly are getting destroyed the past 2 years.
Seniors are getting destroyed.
About a half a million, maybe more, actually died.
By COVID.
Yes, maybe 750,000 seniors. I don't know the breakdown, but a significant number. I mean, I know that at least 400,000, were of working age. Presumably the other 600,000-700,000 older than that for the most part. And it's also just sort of amazing. Like, he clearly was the only thing he wanted to get across there was do not cut Social Security and Medicare. Cause he had that thing where it's like, they give him a line and then he comments on the line and he hadn't even, it didn't even seem like he even thought about it. Like, it's, the border is the worst border.
It's like a Trump AI. Like, he runs it through the same sort of like different ways of saying and framing.
Horrible.
Things.
And he ends it with the Democrats there, which I know he has to do essentially, but the message was clearly to Republicans.
Well, yeah, he said it at the top of it.
Yes,
he said
right.
it was to the Republicans.
I love the superlatives too. Like, it's probably, when I left, it was the safest border ever. And now probably it's the unsafest border.
Worst. Just horrible. But do you think, this is, it seems to me, I mean, again, this is like Democrats should be, doing everything they can to push the media to frame it this way. But this is the big test. We kept hearing for weeks and weeks in the following of the election, this is the Republicans are making their move away from Trump and this and that. Yeah. Like, are they going to do it here or not? Like, what's the deal? And if I'm in the White House, I'm sitting back and I'm going like, this is the best thing that could happen to us because they're not, what are they going to come to? I mean, unless in the White House, I don't know. It's not inconceivable to me that Joe Biden would love to be like, they handcuffed us. We had to cut the cost of living increases on Social Security or something, that way they can avoid, actually having to raise taxes. Let's say 4 years down the road, 5 years down the road, 6 years down the road to shore up the Social Security trust fund.
Well, what they want, if they're smart in the White House, they should be doing everything they can to head off Senate moderates from doing a Simpson Bowles here.
Yes.
And like, that's one of the worst case scenarios here is that's where this is headed. And I, honestly,
to be clear, Simpson and Bowles was a commission set up by the Obama administration. Simpson, longtime Republican senator, he had retired at that point. Erskine Bowles, a longtime sort of Democratic, like I think he was chief of staff for Clinton, I think it was, yeah. Bill Clinton, also a Social Security privatizer at that time. And so he put on two opponents of Social Security, one who was virulently opposed, the other who was like just technocratically opposed in terms of the way they expressed it, had a commission that was going to come out with recommendations. The recommendations were only going to be valid if three quarters of the commission signed on to them.
Yep.
They couldn't get three quarters. Yeah. And so they put out a report anyways and pretended it was like the reports commission. Yeah. And fortunately, people pushed back enough on this that, and frankly, the Tea Party wouldn't accept Joe Biden's deal. And by the end of the Obama years, the Senate Democratic caucus voted to increase Social Security.
Yep.
It was not binding because it was just the caucus, but so this is going to be this. We're going to see a lot in terms of like how our politics have progressed over the next like 4 or 5 months when we deal with this.
Yeah, I know. I think so. I think that's right. And I think that the tenor of the debate is certainly way different than it was during those Obama years. I mean, they both have to, you know, battle the conservative desire to gut these programs, but also like they will have to be prepared for, you know, moderate Democrats to like want to seize this opportunity too. So we'll see. But yeah, I think you're right. We're going to see how much the debate's changed.
It should be interesting. And hopefully, you know, like there is there'll be a ramping up of the sort of like the mechanisms that have protected Social Security over the past 15 years or so. You know, there's been, they come back to this well very often. Yeah. And you know, this is the famous thing that Al Gore, I mean, people may not even know what I'm referring to at this point, but Al Gore running in the 2000 election was talking about a lockbox over and over again.
Well, and that's, I mean, it's, you know, that became a joke, maybe like the lockbox, but then it's like, what did Bush do in his second term?
Right.
Someone else who misunderstood what his mandate was. I mean, I think Trump remembers that. Bush tried to sort of do a big Social Security privatization push, and that ended up a complete fiasco.
That was the first law. That was before Katrina, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
It was right after his election.
Mm. Yeah.
He came out. He wanted to privatize. He walked down into like some basement of the Treasury.
Yeah.
And he just said, there's no money here. It's just IOUs, just pieces of paper.
Yeah.
Just pieces of paper. Just pieces of paper, IOUs, which incidentally we call in this country treasury bonds.
Yeah.
Which the whole debt ceiling fight is all about.
Yes.
People don't they just have IOUs.
Yep.
That's it. And
right.
We don't default on that. And what Gore was saying at the time with the lockbox is the U.S. government was borrowing from the Social Security Trust Fund and didn't want to pay it back. And the way they wanted to avoid paying it back was by basically cutting Social Security. So it wasn't immediate that you needed to pay it back.
Right.
And so he was going around saying, we need this to be a lockbox because statutorily speaking, Social Security cannot add to the deficit.
Right.
It has its own revenue stream. It is distinct from the general budget. It cannot contribute to the deficit. What needs to happen is we need to get rid of the cap on Social Security.
They should have done that preemptively, by the way. I mean, in hindsight,
there
were a lot of priorities that they needed that they were working with within Biden's first 2 years. But that would have saved us a lot of hurt if they were just proactive about raising the cap or eliminating it altogether, honestly.
Alex Perrine, always a pleasure. We will check back with you probably in several weeks, see where we're at, watch this crap show unfold. Hopefully by then we'll be able to talk about the different birthmarks on Hunter Biden's private parts, because we'll have seen it, and we'll be in full-on Mayorkas impeachment hearings.
Yeah, yeah, and, awesome.
What else? Is there anything else that you anticipate? Google and Facebook show trials.
Yeah. We're gonna have all of the tech guys hauled up. I mean, and I think we're gonna have like there's gonna be C-SPAN's gonna be nothing but shadow ban hearings. Mm. You know, just like
are they gonna play that on C-SPAN or is it gonna be exclusively on Rumble?
I'm not sure, but
all right, Alex Breen, always a pleasure. Appreciate it.
Of course, yeah. Thanks,
Alex.
All right, folks. Now on to the Crowder stuff. I know Alex Breen's probably bummed that he missed that. What should we do? Should we go into the fun half or?
We're
Freebie Friday.
You can do a Freebie Friday and keep the Crowder stuff and the free stuff.
It's your call. Mm. I mean, it would be a big draw. Mm.
What's that for the fun half?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I guess maybe we'll do that because, you know, I learned a lesson from this big fight between them.
You have to be a businessman about it?
Well, you know, and we'll get to this in the thing, but there's a dynamic that Crowder and that Boring guy, is that literally his name?
Yeah, Jeremy Boring.
We're arguing about, you know, on a lot of it has to do with like, if your YouTube thing is inhibited, your revenue is inhibited and this and that, and Crowder's trying to make it. I mean, I can't wait to unpack all this because there's so much bullshit flowing around here. It's unbelievable. Mm-hmm. I'm swearing a lot today because I think I'm so excited.
Yeah. I mean, coming into the office, the energy was different.
Yeah. No, it's like
big tech is in bed with big con.
but one of the things that Crowder, his whole strategy has been, if you want to see me be explicitly anti-Semitic or explicitly racist or explicitly a COVID denial or, you know, explicitly transphobic, although he seems to be able to get away with that on YouTube, you're going to have to join the Mug Club.
Mm-hmm.
Now, with the fun half, you can watch us live and see it. And sometimes Amy will put out clips too, but we don't, that's just our business model. We don't there's nothing that we do in the fun half that's going to get us banned from YouTube any more than what gets us in the front half.
Right.
Because, I am not self-loathing enough to, expand that to all Semites.
Gotcha.
Right. So I'm not anti-Semitic. I am not racist. I mean, we all practice white supremacy in some fashion or another, but I don't say racist things, I hope. I am not anti-vax. I am not a COVID denier.
Mm-hmm.
I am not transphobic.
HIV denier.
I am not HIV denier.
Oh, right. I forgot he was going to.
And so we don't have to encourage people to go there. But what we do say like, oh, if you want to see me crap all over Crowder and also Ben Shapiro.
I mean, the burns might be so sick that it could be classified as, I don't know, something a little bit controversial.
Put up the picture. Put up the picture that I put on my Twitter before the show today. I will show you this. This will be on the free show.
Not safe for work, people.
This is barely safe for work.
Yeah.
This is to give you a little preview of what's going to be happening today on the program in the fun half. Could you put that up? Here we go. This is it right here. There we go. There we go.
I mean,
is that Photoshopped or is that a toy?
That is a toy. Apparently, Saul, when he came back from Christmas and seeing his grandparents, this is what he came back with, one of these things.
Does it light up and make noise?
It looks like it lights up.
Yeah. I don't know, actually. I only put it on once because I was like, dude, there's too much junk in this house. Like, you got to bring this to your mother's. But I said, but wait, let me let me take a selfie with it. I have a couple of my duck, but they're all basically like that. And I knew I would have to deploy it at one point, and here it is.
Yep.
Perfect. And then, you know what I did is I squeezed my hand and pointed at him, and I made him evaporate, my son.
Oh, yep. There we go.
And but I did that to save half the population.
It's utilitarianism.
Yeah. Yep. Folks, it's your support that makes this show possible. You can become a member at jointhemajorityreport.com. When you do, you not only get the free show, but you get the fun half.
Mm.
You get the free show, free of commercials, and you get the fun half.
With fun things like this.
We're gonna spend some time on this. I know that it upset people that I tweeted about this. Some people were like, how can you do this when other things are happening? Well, this is the fun half, and yeah. It's Friday. And how do we bring you all the interviews that we do in the first half of the program? We do that by you becoming a member at the Majority Report. Join themajorityreport.com. Yes. Also, justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY, get 10% off. Check out the new apps, both iOS and Android. The app, people are just raving about the app, the best app. Also, AM Quickie, amquickie.com. Sign up. We've just taken it. It is now, I think we give you 2 or 3 days a week, 2 days a week free. 2 days a week, 3 days a week free.
Yep.
And all five
Tuesday,
days a
Thursday.
Week for just $2 a month.
Yeah.
$2 a month. And you get this delivered to your mailbox every. It's really just a.
It's great.
Break even proposition for us. Corey and Jack are great writers. Check it out. And also, don't forget we're going to have special guests in the second half of the show today.
We do, yep.
Shoot.
Jason Miles and Ben Burgess will be joining us in advance of, you don't need to do much,
okay.
Of our Sunday show at the Cutting Room in Manhattan, January 22nd. Doors at 6, show at 7. Folks, still tickets available.
Check it out. It's going to be crazy.
It's going to be fun.
Emma, what's happening on ESPN?
Yesterday, Bradley and I gave our picks for the divisional round for the NFL, which is my favorite weekend. It's a little bit more anxiety-inducing because the Giants are playing, so I don't have the same excitement that I normally have. It's more just like kind of terror and anxiety. But anyway, we gave our picks against the spread. We also spoke about the incident with the Philadelphia Flyers where a player decided to object to wearing a pride jersey on religious grounds and how that's basically bullshit, and among other things, youtube.com/ESPN show. Yeah, he's that's idiotic. Oh, and
does he not play on? Does he not play on the Lord's Day?
Apparently, he does play on Sundays.
What?
Yeah.
That I thought like keeping the Sabbath holy was a little bit higher on the list of things.
I mean, what's holier than the gridiron?
He's also contractually obligated to do it, and they were supposed to auction those jerseys off to LGBTQ charities after the game, so he breached his contract as well.
Wow.
Anyway.
Matt, what's happening in the...
Oh, well, the
Matt
live show.
Leck Entertainment.
Come to the live show, folks. That's what's happening this week in Left Reckoning.
And if I remember correctly, doors open at 7, show starts at 6.
Yeah, which is a bold strategy, but we're going to hope it pays off for us. Yeah, here, I'll put it up for people one last time. Under 21 with parental illegal guardian. When it works, you scroll down just a little bit, Bradley. January 22nd. At the Cutting Room, 44 East 32nd Street, New York, close to the Empire State Building. So if you're coming from out of town, you can look at that. It's nice.
Go early. Go maybe about 5:15. Go get you're near Koreatown. Go get some Korean barbecue.
Mm-hmm.
Then head over.
Also, you could do karaoke before you come. There's fun karaoke places in that area.
I don't do that, but I do a Korean.
Oh yeah,
barbecue.
I would never. I would seeing you in a karaoke setting. I couldn't imagine it.
I've been in it once or twice, and it's not. It's
you hate it.
Everybody is uncomfortable with me even just being there.
Hmm.
646-257-3920 is the number. We'll see you in the fun half.
You are in for it.
All right, folks. 646-257-3920. See you in the fun half.
Oh no! Are you ready?
Who sent us this?
Anarchy. Alpha males are back. Boy, back. and the alpha males are back, back.
Just as delicious as you could imagine.
The alpha males are back, 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 back. Boy, back. And the alpha males are back, 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 back.
Just want to degrade the white man.
Alpha males are back, back.
I take all of it to my throat.
Alpha males are back, back. Back, back.
Snowflake says what?
The alpha males are back, 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 back.
You are a madman!
And the alpha males are back, back.
Oh no, Sam Cedar, what a fucking nightmare!
Nightmare!
Bring back DJ Dinner.
Yeah, or a couple of them, just put them in rotation.
DJ Dinner.
Well, the problem with those is they're like 45 seconds long, so I don't know if they're enough for the break.
That's fucking nonsense.
See white people doing drugs that look worse than normal white people, and all white people look disgusting.
And the alpha males,
psych, fuck them, fuck them.
Snowflake says what?
What?
Snowflake says what?
A hell of a lot of bang. A hell of a lot of bang. A hell of a lot of bank. Okay. I'm making stupid money. A hell of a lot of bank. A hell of a lot of bank.
All lives matter.
Have you tried doing an impression on a college campus?
I think that there's no reason why reasonable people across the divide can't all agree with this. Psych.
And the alpha males are back, 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 back. And the Africans are black, 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 black African. And the alpha males are black, 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 black. And the Africans are back, 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 black,
black. When you see Donald Trump out there, doesn't a little part of you think that America deserves to be taken over by jihadists? Keeping it 100. Can't knock the hustle. Come on. Fuck them. Fuck them.
Things I do for the bigger game plan.
By the way, it's my birthday.
My birthday. Birthday.
Happy birthday to me, Jew boy.
I have a thought experiment for you.
And the alpha males are back, back. Africans are black, black. Alpha males are black, black. Africans are back, back.
Come on.
Someone needs to pay the price for blasphemy around here.
I am a total pussy.